This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In recent years, as New Hampshire has struggled to balance its books, all kinds of state services have been on the chopping block. But one that's received particular attention is mental health. As federal and state dollars for these services have dwindled, providers say they've struggled to keep up with demand. Then last year, the budget axe fell even harder with the end of stimulus dollars aimed at needy families, reductions in federal Medicaid payments, and further cuts from the state legislature. So now, according to those who work in mental health, we're seeing the harsh effects they warned would occur. As our system of community and home-based care declines, more patients are seeking help in hospital emergency rooms and large institutions like the state hospital. That's the exact model New Hampshire has tried to avoid because it costs more and is seen as less effective. One lawsuit's already been filed on behalf of patients. Another could be brewing. But state health officials say these legal challenges are unfair, given the recession, a sluggish recovery, and ever-limited dollars. They also say the state is still making progress, albeit slower than anyone wants. Meanwhile, those lawmakers who crafted the recent budget agree it's been challenging, but they also say tight finances offer an opportunity to re-examine how we provide mental health services and whether new approaches are needed. Today in The Exchange, budget cuts in the state's mental health system. Let's hear from you if you have personal experience with mental health services in this state. What changes have you noticed over the years? If you think the state should spend more in this area, where else could the government cut back? And what innovations might improve the system, even in an era of limited dollars? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. With me in studio, three people who've been looking at this issue for a long time. Representative Thomas Keene is here. He's a Republican from Bow. He serves on the Finance Committee and has worked in the behavioral health care field. And Representative Keene, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Nancy Rollins, Associate Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. She oversees the Division of Community-Based Care Services. She's been with the department for more than 20 years. And Nancy, welcome back. Thanks for being here, too.
Thanks, Laura.
And also with us, Louis Josephson, CEO of Riverbend Community Mental Health in Concord. He's been in the field for a long time, been at Riverbend for 7 years. And Louis, good morning. Thank you for being here as
well. Good morning.
Well, and Louis, I'll start with you because you're involved on the ground, seeing people face-to-face. What changes have you noticed over your years in this field?
Well, we've seen a steady decline, certainly in the 7 years I've been here, and it's really about the people we're serving. They're just not getting the quality and the level of service that they need. The biggest hits that we've seen is the loss of residential beds. So these are for people with serious mental illness. The rates for those beds that we were paid were way under what the cost is. We've lost 44 beds. So what happens when somebody who's really sick ends up in the state psychiatric hospital and then they have to go out to a supported setting and there's no place for them to go? They either sit in the hospital, they come out in an unstable situation and they recycle right back into the hospital or the emergency departments of our local hospitals. And so you have a very intense group of people with high needs and we just don't have the right level of care for them. And now, as the Department of Justice lawsuit talks about, we're really spending money in sort of all the wrong places. We're spending money at the most expensive level and not giving people the evidence-based care we know can keep them and sustain them in the community and give them a life in the community. And now I'm really worried because we're headed towards managed care for Medicaid. And the responsibility is going to be shifted to these out-of-state managed care for-profit companies that are going to promise the legislature to save millions of dollars sort of on the backs of the people we serve. And I'm just worried that they're not going to have people's best interest in mind. And I know for our representatives and our state leaders, they're very concerned. But I have to look at these people every day. I would ask Nancy or Representative Keene to come to the emergency room at Concord Hospital right after this meeting and see the people who have been waiting there for days and talk to their families and their kids about what that experience is like because they can't get into the hospital. And we know even if they get into the hospital, it's going to be a revolving door at best.
So what's the ideal then, Louis? The ideal is to have a small community-based setting, you know, a residential place with 10 beds where people can get that sort of intimate one-on-one? Is that the ideal that we're striving for here?
I think you need a continuum of services. We'll never get rid of New Hampshire Hospital. We'll always need some capacity for the most ill people in an acute phase, but you have to have some services that for them to step down to. And as expensive as those seem, it's way cheaper than $950 a day at New Hampshire Hospital, and it gives people a quality of life. The Department of Justice findings said we are out of compliance as a state with the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Olmstead Rule, which says that people have to be served in the least restrictive setting. So it's about people's rights. It's about the quality of their experience. And it's about optimizing people. There's a view out there, such a stigma of people with serious mental illness that they can't work and they can't be part of society. We've seen if we give them the right supports at the right level at the right time, they can work and be productive people in our communities.
Well, and Nancy, I know obviously there's a lawsuit, so you can't comment specifically on the lawsuit. I'm not going to ask you to do that. But you have been involved in this system for a long time. Your thoughts, Nancy, on this devolution, if I can call it that, that Lewis describes from that ideal of community-based care to a more institutionalized setting where people are not served as well as perhaps they could be?
First of all, I think that New Hampshire was one of the leaders going back in the early 80s, and that really was predicated on a number of things. There were grant funds that came from the National Institute of Mental Health that helped provide dollars to set up and establish what was then called the community support programs. It had all evolved out of the 1963 signing of the Community Mental Health Center Act. And certainly there were funds from, as I said, NIMH, but also going into the 80s, there was changes made to Medicaid that allowed persons with disabilities and funding from Medicaid to be utilized in order to provide services to people in community. One of the things that happened in New Hampshire, as in many states, is that we went from an institution which in its heyday had over 2,100 individuals down to the facility that we have today of 144 beds. And so we were able to reinvest those state dollars and use them to be matched for Medicaid funds. But I also have to emphasize that while there's a heavy focus on the state funds, the Medicaid match, and so forth, one of my other concerns, and I think a substantial change over time, has been the whole tapestry, if you will, of funding for persons who are vulnerable, who are fragile, living in communities. When we went to moving people to community living, it involved funds from the Housing and Urban Development, known as HUD. SSI is a significant, Social Security is a significant funding stream. Food stamps, multiple funding streams are used to support individuals and communities who have, because of their mental illness, hit a point where they cannot be totally independent. In order to weave them back into the community, as all of those funds have shrunk, and in many instances, the cost of living adjustments have not kept pace, the entire tapestry is shrinking. And so
Nancy,
it becomes more difficult overall.
And just backing up a little bit, and you're referencing what New Hampshire used to be. It was considered a national model for taking people with mental illness out of institutions and in these community-based settings. And you're saying that used to be easier to do because this tapestry was available from the federal government. No longer the case.
Well, it was a mixture of the federal government and state funds. Absolutely.
So
there's
what
been
happened?
Changes over that. Well, I think that there were...
How do we go from national model to, you know, lawsuit?
Well, again, I think that there have been newer regulations. I think that there have been shifts in policy and thought relative to individuals. I think things have gotten more challenging relative to some of the forensic issues that some of our population present with. I think it's a multitude of things. And I think that community attitude has changed relative to stigma is still quite evident in terms of being able to even cite housing in a community, in terms of who's willing to have individuals living in their community who have a serious and persistent mental illness. So there's a multitude of those kinds of social issues that are engaged in this policy discussion.
Well, and Thomas Keene, you're not coming at this cold. You've been involved in this issue both at the state legislative level, but also as someone who's worked in this field. Do you see this worrisome trend that Nancy and Lewis see?
I do. I think that one of the issues is these are the new realities, and how do we adapt to them? And one of my concerns is we've been looking at how do we get more money, and what we really should be looking at is how do we evolve? How do we adapt? How do we evolve to the new realities? Because I don't think in the long term that we're going to see a lot more money. We're never going to be able to design the current or fund the current system for providing care. So we have to come up with something new.
And what does that new system look like? Give us just a preview.
Well, you know, some of the things I think about when I think about what the system might look like is, for instance, a clubhouse model. It's a very inexpensive model. It gets consumers, former patients involved in the care of other patients and helping other patients, not the care and medication or something like that, but in helping them find a job, in helping them write a resume, in helping them find housing. I think we're stuck, from my perspective, we're stuck in a model that was the national model 30 years ago. Now we need to move to something different if we want to be at the top of the if we want to be the new national model.
How do we do that? What's the first step?
I think probably the first step would be to start involving many of the consumers in the discussion much more than we have in the past. One of the things I think we need to start with is services on demand. That is that people get into the system quickly and they get out of the system quickly. Does that mean that they're going to have relapses and come back into the system? Absolutely. But the system needs to be flexible. For instance, and let me just give you one of the problems that I think I've seen just recently in the last year. We heard from the New Hampshire Hospital that they have a team who does emergency evaluations. We also have a team of people at Lewis's Center, Riverbend, who do emergency admissions and evaluations at local hospitals. The New Hampshire Hospital apparently doesn't accept the evaluations that are done by Lewis's folks. They're fine people. They're intelligent people. They know what they're doing. Why does New Hampshire Hospital have to have a team to do a second evaluation within the hours? And Lewis's people, the people at Riverbend who are at Concord Emergency Room, those people are already medically cleared. That is, they have to see a physician there. Lewis's folks do the evaluation. They go to the New Hampshire Hospital. They ought to be taken in and put on the unit.
So there's some efficiencies that could be made there as well. All right, we will definitely talk about this new model that Representative Keene talks about and take your calls to 1-800-892-6477. If you have personal experience with New Hampshire's mental health system, we want to hear from you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Lexus Hybrids, now with five models, including the CT, with a combined EPA rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More at Lexus.com. And New Hampshire Association for the Blind presenting Going Blind going forward February 25th at Wentworth Douglas Hospital in Dover from 1 till 3 p.m. Sitecenter.org. More on evaluating mental health care in New Hampshire on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. It's the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather today, snow developing across central and northern parts of the state. May mix with some sleet or freezing rain in central areas of the state. Most areas could see between 2 to 6 inches, while parts of northern New Hampshire could see over 6 inches. Any snow or sleet in southern New Hampshire changing to rain. Accumulations in southern parts of the state will be under an inch, though the Monadnock region of the state could see between 2 to 5 inches. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, making sense of mental health care in New Hampshire. Once, about 20 years ago, the Granite State was praised for its mental health care system nationally. Now it faces harsh criticism and a lawsuit. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you have experience with mental health services in this state, what changes have you noticed over the years? If you'd like to see the state spending more in this area, where else do you think the state government could cut back to compensate for that spending? And are there innovations, as Representative Keene has talked about, that might improve the system, even in this era of tight budgets? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, we're now on Facebook, so we hope you'll go to our page. You can join the conversation there. And just going back to you, Nancy Rollins and Louis Josephson, based on what Representative Keene said, what do you think, Louis? You know, the model that we're hoping to recreate here is 30 years old. Maybe it is time for a new model.
Well, I'm always willing to look at new things, and I think there are effective evidence-based treatments. I would disagree, unfortunately, with Representative Keene. Clubhouse is an old model, and especially under managed care, I can't believe they would approve that as a medically necessary service. But I would agree that employment services, intensive services like assertive community treatment teams, ACT teams, have evidence-based that they keep people out of the hospital. We had a gentleman who was in on our ACT team here in Concord, got out of control with his behavior, was taken to the emergency room. Police were called. He was assaulting staff. But our ACT team went up to the emergency room, and he was able to go home that same evening with their support. So you'd think that person would absolutely need to be in the hospital. They don't need to be. I would like to go back.
So you guys really have that professional expertise to get folks out of crisis and back home.
Right. But I would just point out, we do things on the cheap in this state. So we have an ACT team, but it's not funded fully as an evidence-based model. It doesn't function around the clock. It doesn't have the dedicated psychiatric time that we need. So I would just like to go back to Representative Keene's comments about we're never going to be able to fund the system. That may be true, but what worries me here is that the state is avoiding their responsibility. There is a responsibility to care for people. Just because we don't have the money doesn't mean the people with illnesses go away. And we have to be able to think this through and not abdicate our responsibility. I think what he also said, and I would disagree a little bit here in terms of people coming in for acute care on demand, that sounds to me like what we're doing right now, which is essentially rationing care. We don't have the psychiatric time. We don't have the case management time. People come in for an episode of care. They go out again. We're not holding on to people for a long time. That's not what we do. We just don't have the capacity to even do the revolving door. And I really would question whether revolving door care can really stabilize somebody and get them involved in employment and other productive things.
Are there ways, though, Lewis, that you could sort of rework what you do to do more with less if this ever-tight budget is our new reality?
Absolutely. I would put more money in the supportive housing in a heartbeat. And Nancy's right, it took a lot of funds to bring it up, but we've got 44 vacant beds that went vacant over the last few years that could come up to speed very quickly if we had some of the basic funding for that. So housing, ACT teams, mobile crisis teams, and those are the things I think we could quickly keep the census down in New Hampshire Hospital and keep people out of the emergency departments.
Nancy, do you want to jump in on some of these comments?
I do. I have to agree with Lou relative to the clubhouse model, but I actually am a very firm believer in the clubhouse model.
Can you talk a little bit more about what that is? Representative Keene talked about it, but a little more.
In New York City, there's also a substance abuse, a similar one that started Delaney's House in San Francisco. But basically, it's peer-run and it's peer support relative to every step of the way, helping them with housing, employment, and so forth. But the other key piece to the clubhouse model is that they do not take state funding or federal funding. It is all done through donations. It's all done through foundation funds and so forth. It's not something that is a billable service. And as a matter of fact, SAMHSA hasn't even funded clubhouse models for years.
SAMHSA is what?
I'm sorry, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Service Administration.
That's right. There's lots of agencies
involved
here. Thank you.
Yes, there's lots of initials. But the other point related to that is one of the reasons it's a struggle for clubhouse models right now, and again, it goes to the broader economy, when there are not people in good jobs who are making money, who can make donations. You're seeing the foundations go down. You've seen the donations go down. We actually have a clubhouse model up and running in Manchester, but for the diligence of two very active families to bring that about. But it has taken a long period of time to get that up and running. We actually in New Hampshire have been at the forefront of peer support programs and look to continue to expand that, enhance that. We want peer support to include things like being able to have their own crisis beds in the community. That peer-to-peer support is absolutely necessary. I agree to a degree with Representative Keene relative to we need to make some changes. But in order to effect change, you need funds to develop new things, to be able to train people to do things differently. But I have to say overall, the model and the goal has not changed. The model and the goal has been to assist people towards recovery, to keep people in their community, and help them become independent, productive citizens.
Well, and I'm sure the goal hasn't changed. But what about the model? Again, are there other models that you could be looking at?
I think, again, that we've been at the forefront with a number of the evidence-based practices in terms of illness management and recovery services, supported employment, supported housing, the kinds of things that Lou was talking about, the assertive community treatment teams. We have those models. And also, the models in terms of how they're applied have evolved over time as well, in terms of it's not necessarily a cookie-cutter approach. But again, the research and other things have not necessarily kept pace because those kinds of funding streams have not remained consistent as well.
And Representative Keene, a question for you, and then we'll go to our callers. And this is more of a broader budgetary question. When you folks were crafting the budget last year, looking at the mental health budget, and I know that even though you've called for other models, you've also been concerned. You know, you care about what happens to these folks. Was there a conversation about, look, let's fund this as much as we can, and let's cut some other stuff that maybe isn't as critical?
There was. And, of course, that's what the whole budget process is about this year. Everybody, almost everybody, took some kind of cut. So the priorities were, where do you make the deepest cuts? And health and human services is a huge part of the general fund. It is by far the lion's share of the general fund. So the cuts, if you're going to cut the general fund, if you're going to cut expenses, pretty much it has to come out of health and human services, although I will say the other divisions cut as well.
Did it, though? I mean, people say it's the biggest department, so that's where you go. But one could argue, and Nancy and Lewis would probably argue, okay, but these are critical services. If people have severe mental illness and they're not getting the help they need, they're showing up in the prisons, they're showing up at the police department, you know, they may be causing, you know, difficulty in their families or in the community. So one could make the argument, yes, it's the biggest, but these are vital services. Are there other areas you could be looking at?
You know, it's a difficult—
I just wonder what you think.
Yeah. My thought on this is it's very difficult to make these cuts. If we fund mental health, and I thought at one point I had a solution that would have put $22 million back into mental health, but that didn't pan out at the end of the session. But if we fund mental health to the maximum, that means we have to cut deeper in child health care program or some other program out there. So it's always weighing which of the most critical needs is, you know, is the top priority. And this session, we kind of spread that out.
Let's take some calls. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And first up is Dave in Manchester. Hi, Dave. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple concerns. Number one, I believe that this cutting of the mental health services and all human services, substance abuse, is just all part of the conservative agenda to balance the budget in the state of New Hampshire. And I don't think the people are really understanding the depth and weight of this problem. You know, you're spending your time up there passing laws so that people can carry guns into the state house, and you're not funding people to get help that are the likely ones that would walk in.
So where should the money come from, Dave?
Well, the money should come from the state. The money should come from the federal government. And there are models. There are, you know, this is, we're looking at pie in the sky. You're passing the responsibility off community centers. There are places that have community centers. State of Vermont has community centers for substance abuse. The state of Connecticut has set the precedent for these community centers for substance abuse. And so everybody that works in the field understands that substance abuse is probably the number one health problem in America today, and that mental health goes co-occurring in so many cases.
Right. Dave, thanks a lot for calling in. And I think I'm going to throw that to you first, Representative Keene, but I've got a question for you too, Lewis. Go ahead, Representative Keene. What do you think? He says, hey, this is part of an agenda and you don't really understand what's going on out there.
Well, you know, in my particular case, I spent 40 years in the field of mental health and substance abuse. I think I do understand what's going on out there. And there is a financial reality to all this. I mean, we were balancing almost a $1 billion deficit. Whenever you do that, you're going to have to cut some programs. And substance abuse and mental health are near and dear to my heart. I mean, I've spent 4 decades working in the field and around the field. But at the end of the day, everybody has to take their share of cuts.
Lewis, he mentioned substance abuse, and he's right. Sometimes mental illness and substance abuse are what he called co-occurring, happening at the same time. Does that complicate your efforts to get money sometimes, that you can't get mental health treatment before you deal with your substance abuse problem? I think I've heard that that creates financial problems as well.
Right. It doesn't create a clinical problem. We know how to work effectively with people
right.
with these co-occurring disorders.
But on
yes,
paper,
financially, right. If somebody, the state rules for mental health centers is if you have an active substance abuse problem and we can't tell them absolutely your symptoms are caused only by the mental health part of your issues, then they won't pay for that service. I would just say I appreciate Representative Keene. I know he struggled and tried to fight for services and money for our services. But the other thing is, I think we have to think a little more broadly and creative. Think of the cost to the prison system with people with mental illness. Think of millions of dollars to expand the special psychiatric unit at the state prison. Think of all of those costs. And if we're able to bring those down as Nancy said, reinvest those monies into our outpatient services, I think we can have a more humane and effective treatment system. So we have to be creative and look under a lot of different rocks and a lot of different funding silos to realize where we can bring some money into our system.
And the federal government has played a role here, too, as Nancy described. There's all sorts of federal programs that used to be there that are no longer there.
That's correct.
Nancy, is there an effort or a thought at the state government level to change that definitional problem that Lewis talked about so you could get some of these folks who have both substance abuse and mental illness the help that they need?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we don't necessarily differentiate by diagnosis today in Medicaid services. If someone needs outpatient treatment, they can certainly get that, and it's not, you know, pursuant to a particular diagnosis. We are looking to and have worked at the state level relative to changing the licensure rules relative to master's level licensed alcohol and drug abuse counselors being able to effectively treat persons with dual diagnosis. We do believe that people need specialized training to understand both mental illness as well as substance abuse and certainly how those two things impact one another. So those kinds of things are happening. We are looking at some aspects of enhancements to substance abuse treatment with regards to the work we're doing in managed care and our step two design, because we do believe that co-occurring issues are a significant reality.
So right now, if I had major depression and substance abuse, would the state say to me, hey, Laura, you got to clear up your substance abuse before we can help you with the depression?
Well,
it's not that clear cut.
It's not that clear cut. And I think that's one of the issues in terms of, you know, what certainly therapists at a community mental health center are able to do, some of our therapists at some of the substance abuse treatment programs. We don't want to tie their hands, or even the independent therapists. We'd like to see a similar kind of law change relative to the mental health counselors.
All right, let's take another call. And let's go next to North Conway. Jen's waiting there. Hi, Jen. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jen Bella. I'm a licensed clinical social worker up in North Conway, and I'm fascinated by this conversation but dismayed to some degree about all the sort of the rhetoric and the generalizations. It is so difficult to get treatment for somebody who is without insurance and who is suffering from really severe acute symptoms such as suicidal ideation. And there has been times when it has taken me up to 2 weeks to get somebody into the hospital because I have to basically say that they are in such danger that they are in imminent risk to kill themselves and that they have to go involuntarily because that's the only way I can get a hold of one of those beds, which is somewhat of a humiliating experience for somebody. They have to go in a police car. They're taken into an emergency room where the staff there doesn't really not want to deal with these types of patients. So that's one of my comments. It's just incredibly frustrating up here. There's just not the services. I think the state of New Hampshire really needs to pony up more money, and maybe that means raising taxes, but, you know, you get what you pay for, and we're not getting much. The second thought is, rather than a clubhouse or something like that, many HMOs will pay for outpatient treatment that is a day treatment program. We don't have anything like that north of Concord.
Okay.
And that would be essential, something that is an insurance-approved outpatient day treatment program. where they could come and go. So it's not complete hospitalization, it's partial hospitalization.
You know, Jen, thanks for calling in, and it's good to hear from you. You know, everybody's struggling at these community mental health centers, but in the North Country, the struggles are perhaps even more because it's just less available in terms of professionalism and so forth. Representative Keene, to you first, what about private insurers? I mean, don't they play a role here in ensuring some of the services that Jen is talking about?
Absolutely. Mental health has been a mandated service in substance abuse for a number of years now. So private pays, private insurance companies are a part of the solution. And certainly the biggest lion's share, though, for community mental health centers and most public policy people is the Medicaid piece.
So people who don't have private insurance
right.
and are on Medicaid. And Medicaid is supposed to cover these services, though, right?
That's correct.
So the problem is, Lewis, it's not enough?
Absolutely, it's not enough. We have waiting lists at all the community mental health centers for psychiatric visits. Not every community mental health center has one of those assertive community treatment teams. And so there are real gaps out there. I would say on the commercial side, though it's required, Representative Keene, it also pays really poorly. So we've lost so many voluntary psychiatric beds at Androscoggin Valley Hospital, Catholic Medical Center, Southern New Hampshire Medical Center. We keep bleeding psychiatric beds because the hospitals are losing money on every day that they serve someone there. So commercial needs to be at the table, but they have to pay a rate that makes it sustainable.
I see. So commercial could be part of this, but they haven't been as willing to play ball, or the rates aren't enough to make them want to play ball. Is that what you're saying, Lewis?
Exactly. And it's they're not enough to make the hospitals and those providers want to provide those services at a loss.
Representative Keene.
Lots of times, private insurers limit the number of visits. It may not be the rate so much as it is the number of visits that you can have. And that's a judgment by the private sector in terms of what they believe should be the optimal number of visits before somebody starts, their mental health starts improving.
Nancy, do you want to jump in here real quick, please?
I do. First of all, relative to the insurance, our last caller, Jen, was right on relative to how difficult it is to access insurance, particularly private insurance. And certainly when you have insurance, we've not fully achieved parity within our insurance programs. It's the rate. You could argue that. But I think in addition to that, it's a very traditional model of outpatient treatment, period. Individuals who have serious mental illness benefit from other types of supportive services, the mental illness recovery services, the supported employment, so forth. Those are not things that are paid by private insurance. But the other aspect that I want to point out that I think is important here, and we're talking about the state budget, is we have not met our commitment relative to economic development. Without good quality jobs for individuals with livable wages that have private insurance, we're not able to support our basic needs here in New Hampshire. And so I'd like to see the rhetoric really turn to what are we going to do to adjust that, because without that, we're not going to be able to meet our needs.
More after a short break. Stay with us.
NHPR is starting off our March fund drive with the Jumpstart Challenge. When we raise $120,000 by the end of the first day of the drive, March 7th, we'll receive an additional $12,000. And we're raising the ante this time, too, because when we hit that goal, it will jumpstart our efforts to shorten the drive, hopefully by about 2 days. Your gift today counts toward this challenge. Call 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Holloway Motor Cars of Manchester, authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, prepared for New Hampshire's winter with SUVs and sedans, featuring 4MATIC all-wheel drive, benzcars.com. And from S&W Sports in Concord, a full-service ski and snowboard shop ready for the upcoming February vacation with downhill, cross-country, and snowboard packages online at swsports.net. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, we talk with iconic food writer and activist Frances Moore LePay, whose 1970s book, The Diet for a Small Planet, changed the way many people think about the way they eat. Email us your questions before the program at exchange at nhpr.org and join us Monday morning, live at 9. Today on The Exchange, we're looking again at the debate over New Hampshire's struggling mental health care system, and we'd like to hear from you if you think the state should spend more in this area, as several callers have suggested. Where where else might it cut back? What innovations are there that perhaps we're not looking at that could improve the system even when we have limited dollars? Also, if you have personal experience with this system, we'd like to see what changes you have noticed over the years. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, keep them short, theexchange@nhpr.org. And Louis Josephson, Representative Key, Nancy Rollins, I want to share an email that came in from Glenn, who says 90-95% of the people who enter Portsmouth Hospital's Behavioral Health Unit do not have health insurance, enter the system through the emergency room that is required to provide them care. I would also guess that 100% of these people have no ability to pay for roughly a week in the system to adjust the needed medication at the average cost of $10,000 a week. Glenn says a revolving door is created without outside treatment programs, which could be provided at much less cost. And Louis, you talked about that earlier. Glenn says also the facility at Portsmouth is deplorable. And when patients are discharged, they immediately walk into an incredibly overpriced lobby with a multi-story ceiling height, elaborate artwork, and a fireplace big enough to walk some, for someone to walk into. Behind those walls, he says, people are eating pureed turkey and spongy white bread in a terrible setting. What about this, Representative Keene? You know, hospitals are saying, we can't pay for this, it's too expensive. But by the way, you know, welcome to our fabulous million-dollar lobby.
Well, hospitals in New Hampshire have to run as businesses themselves. And so, you know, I don't feel competent to comment on whether or not they have too large a waiting room or too grandiose waiting room. I think they're businesses. They have to think about how they utilize the space. But I do agree with the fact that the emergency rooms are often flooded with mental health patients, and we need to find a better system to help those folks out and help them out again on demand. If they're there at 2 o'clock in the morning, we've got to figure a way. And I know some of the mental health centers have that capacity. They do a great job. Others don't. That's part of the problem.
And I know Louis and Nancy want to jump in, but another question for you, Representative Keene. How concerned are you that given the squeeze we've seen on mental health services from both the federal and state government, that more and more the hospitals are going to see it, the police are going to see it, the jails are going to see it, the prisons are going to see it, we as broader community members are going to see it as we walk around downtown?
I think that's a concern. I think it's a real concern, but it's always been a concern. I mean, I grew up in Concord, 6 blocks from the New Hampshire State Hospital. And in fact, in some ways, I think it was a better time then because one of my relatives worked at New Hampshire State Hospital. And I got to know some of the patients personally. And yes, they were out walking in the streets of Concord and they were acting a little odd, but there was more acceptance of them, I think, at that point. And I'm not sure where that changed or why. Now people are more afraid of people who act a little differently.
Mm, so our whole attitude.
I think so.
Has changed. What do you think, Louis, getting back to Glenn's email, and Glenn, thanks for that, about the idea that there's this revolving door. People come into the emergency room, they're in crisis, and then they're just kind of cycled in and out again.
I would agree. I think that does happen. Concord Hospital, which is a not-for-profit hospital and really believes and invests in its mission providing charity care, we provide a ton of charity care in Concord. In the new emergency department there, we have dedicated very expensive real estate just for behavioral health. Because of the long waits now, we have people waiting for several days. We've had to hire round-the-clock psychiatric nurses. That's all at the expense of Concord Hospital. Security, all at the expense of Concord Hospital. And really, I think what should be said is maybe some hospitals are a little too grand in their plans in some ways, but really this is not the responsibilities of the hospitals. It's a default because the emergency rooms can't turn people and shouldn't turn people away. But this is really a state problem. It is not the hospital's problem. This is because we don't have enough beds throughout the state, and particularly at New Hampshire Hospital.
All right, let's take another call. This is Ken in Concord. Hi, Ken. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks. Great show and some real good specifics. I wanted to kind of take one big step back and look more globally at this issue, which is that science has clearly demonstrated that mental illness is biologically based, like any other medical illness, yet we continue to discriminate against people with mental illness, both in New Hampshire and nationally, because we're limiting access to treatments, which, you know, some of your speakers have indicated research has shown to be effective. And we do this with research as well, because research dollars lag far behind other medical illnesses. So, there was some talk about limiting access to other illnesses, but we don't limit access to very expensive heart disease, cancer treatments, whatever. Why do we continue to do this with mental illness, and why as a society do we think that it's okay?
Ken, thanks a lot for calling in. Nancy, what do you think?
I agree with Ken's comment. That certainly goes to the statement I made before around we haven't achieved full parity relative to insurance. I think that's part of the problem, that on the private sector side, they've not understood their responsibility to see mental illness as the same as someone who has cancer or something else, and that it takes a variety of treatment. It's not just one singular traditional outpatient process. The other piece relative to the emergency room, most of the individuals who are coming through the emergency room tend to be the uninsured and tend to be people who are unknown to the community mental health system. Again, I think that goes to the issue relative to not having access to adequate insurance. New Hampshire has a high number of individuals who are self-employed. Talk to anyone who's self-employed who's trying to buy an insurance policy. The deductibles are huge. So consequently, what happens, they don't use their insurance. Things fester, things get out of hand, and then you're in a crisis mode and you end up in the emergency room. That needs to change. We need to change the system so that funding is available to individuals when they need it and that we do more early intervention.
Representative Keene.
I agree with the caller. I think the issue is biological versus behavioral, and we're focused on it's called behavioral health care. And that's part of the problem. You know, we need to dedicate more money to research on the biological side. How does the brain, what's dysfunctional in the brain itself, as opposed to what kind of behavioral programs can we put in place to manage this? I think the call is absolutely right on. And it's my experience as a foster parent in our family. We've had kids who have had behavioral issues and needed hospitalization and have been on all kinds of medication. And the fact is that it's still part science and still part art. The mixing of those medications is really an art more than a science, and it needs to be a science.
You know what's interesting to me about this conversation that we're having, and I think I'll ask you this, Nancy Rollins. So much of what we hear and read about New Hampshire's mental health system is, you know, phooey on the feds for cutting these programs that you mentioned. Shame on, you know, your department, HHS, for not managing these services better. Blaming the legislature for cutting back. And what I'm hearing from you guys is, yes, perhaps all of these are valid points, but you're also talking about the private sector not doing enough in terms of helping people with mental illness, you know, offering skimpy coverage or no coverage at all. How do you feel about that, Nancy? Is the private sector, the private insurance sector, kind of dumping this problem on the states?
I think that they are not stepping up to the plate. I think that there has not been an ability to really support the true concept of parity, even though there have been multiple attempts at the national level to institute that, but it also needs to be picked up in the state level and really fulfilled. Because if you strengthen individuals both in healthcare and mental health care, you're going to get a stronger worker and you're going to get a stronger family member and a stronger community. We've got to look at building that process more than catching people downstream and trying to keep, you know, infusing whatever we can. We kind of get ahead of the curve here relative to looking at the private sector and engaging that. And I truly believe that economic development and jobs that can give sustainable wages are an absolute necessity in this state, but also as a national agenda.
Representative Keene, would the legislature consider mandating that insurance companies cover these services? I can hear the discussion now. You know that would chase companies out of the state. It would raise insurance costs for everybody. There's always a concern when you add additional mandates onto insurers.
The reality is I don't think so. I don't think there's my sentiment would be that there's no willingness to force insurance companies to mandate more coverages. And I think the issue, if we look at insurance companies and private insurance companies, I don't want to paint them as the bad guy in this discussion. You know, there's not parity with other illnesses, but the treatment is different for other illnesses. It's more obvious. Well, it's more biological.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have heart disease, they know there are certain procedures they can do to change that. If it's mental illness, it's very tough to say what would the procedure be to change that. It's a lot of behavior. Well, let's try some of this and some of that, maybe some intervention here and so on and so forth. So it's difficult for private insurance companies, I would think, to get their head around what is this new thing out there that we don't usually deal with.
And yet, if they're not picking up their piece, as Nancy was saying, you guys at the state level have to deal with it. The prisons come to you and say, hey, we need more money for mental health. The hospitals say, hey, don't tax us. We're doing all this charity care for mental health. So you are kind of paying the cost for that.
We are, to some degree. But remember what one of your callers said, and I think Lewis said, and that is that 99% of the people who show up in the emergency room don't have commercial insurance coverage. That's the population we're primarily talking about.
Medicaid. Lewis, jump in here, and then I've got another question for
you. Yeah, I would agree. You know, commercial insurance is a big issue. I would say there are really – it's gotten better, Tom. We have better evidence-based treatments. It's still not precise like with antibiotics, but we can do a good job. Commercial insurance, I think it goes back to what Nancy alluded to. There's still a stigma out there. We get somebody in Concord Hospital who's made a serious suicide attempt 12 hours before the next morning – out the door. The insurance company does not want them in there for a second longer. And I think that wouldn't be the case with an appendicitis or anything else. So there's still a lot of stigma in there. But our evidence-based treatments are better. I think we can do a good job. And I do think we have to hold commercial insurers to their feet to the fire, because this is a needed service. And they're just skimming over it because I think people are embarrassed to access what they're entitled to.
And a question for you, Lewis, that Nancy's brought up a couple times, and that is the jobs piece. You know, yes, definitely. Everyone would say, yes, 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 we need more jobs for everyone. But how do you or Nancy or Representative Keene do that?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, that's a question for our whole country.
I mean, really, is there anything you can do to find good jobs for people who have had problems with mental illness?
Yes, in terms of our population, absolutely. The bigger population, I'm going to defer to the
right.
politicians.
Right, no, absolutely.
But for us, yes, we have a lot of success. And I do give HHS tremendous credit for supporting a program called Supported Employment. And it shows that if we get people, no reservations, into jobs, into supported employment, they will hold jobs and be successful. And I want to credit, I know our Concord community here, because I'm in Concord, our employers step up and do a tremendous job. We've had people placed in restaurants where they've fallen apart with a psychiatric crisis and they're in the hospital for several days, and the employer takes them back and they keep working. And that's just a tribute to this community. I think all of our communities are doing that.
Representative Keene, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's exactly right. And, you know, whether it's substance abuse or mental health or, you know, whatever the issue, having the opportunity for employment is essential to people's mental health. It just gives you a sense of worth, of value. It allows you to do other things in your life. So employment is essential. And my experience in 40 years is exactly the same as Lewis's. And that is that once employers have a person with mental illness in their company, their plant, their store, their restaurant, they get to know them as a person, and they understand much better that these people have an illness that's episodic. That is, that it's going to happen once in a while, and people are going to get better, and they'll come back, and they hold those. And I think that's one of the changes I've seen over the 40 years. There's more willingness to give people a shot.
You know, we talked about, again, criticisms of DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services, and the lawsuits against it and so forth. But, Nancy, I wonder, how much are other states struggling with the same issues that we've talked about here in New Hampshire today?
It is a national trend. There's no question.
It's not just us. Then.
It's not just us. And quite frankly, in many aspects, New Hampshire continues to do very well compared to others. And compared to just in supported employment, in 2010, New Hampshire was almost double the percent average of individuals with mental illness were employed compared to the national average. So New Hampshire continues with its values to do the best it can with its resources. I do want to make a comment relative to my harping on the economy and good jobs for all, because one of the major social policy issues we face in this state is that in just 40 years, we've gone from 62,000 people being on food stamps to 118,000 individuals. That's huge.
Still, even with the slow recovery.
And it's a trend that just continues to keep going upwards. Where is the end of that trend? That's an issue that I think is the most important indicator that our state is struggling. And yes, it may be a national problem, but this state has to have an economic development plan and proposal in place, because if we don't help all of our citizens, those who are vulnerable, those who are frail, are even worse off in the end.
And we all feel it.
And we all feel it.
Lewis.
Yeah, and I would, you know, I personally like to thank Nancy Rollins. If we had every public servant as dedicated and hardworking as Nancy, we'd be in great shape. And Nancy has done a lifetime of service. It's been wonderful.
23 years, Nancy.
Absolutely. So Nancy, my hat is off to Nancy. But I would say that the overall HHS, and this is not on Nancy, has not stood up to the legislature. The legislature said we need to cut, and they say how much? And they say, well, we'll just do managed care Medicaid to solve the problem. Other states have not been as radical as New Hampshire is going to be in terms of managed care Medicaid. For example, other states have gone for that, but they've carved out, they've kept the seriously mentally ill population excluded from that because they have such special needs. I'm very concerned that we're going to fold the seriously mentally ill folks into managed care, and then the legislature is out of it. They've now handed the reins to a managed care organization. The state is also somewhat out of it. They're in a watchdog seat, but not so closely. And who's going to protect people with mental illness and their families?
So, Lewis, you feel like Commissioner Tumpas perhaps has not been as aggressive as he could have been in defending these programs.
Yes, and I don't sit in his seat, so it's easy for me to criticize. But HHS has a mission, and that's to promote the health of people in New Hampshire. And if they feel like there's not sufficient funds or managed care Medicaid would hurt people in New Hampshire, they have a mission obligations to get up there and tell the legislature, you can cut. These will be the outcomes for our citizens.
Okay, well, no easy answers. And I want to thank all of you very much for coming in. Lewis, thanks a lot for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Lewis Josephson, CEO of Riverbend Community Mental Health in Concord. Representative Keene, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Thomas Keene, Republican from Bow, serves on the Finance Committee and has worked in behavioral health care for a long time. And Nancy Rollins, thank you also for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura.
Nancy Rollins, Associate Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. The Exchange was a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation. Learn more about what we're doing every day. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.